full time with Matt Jones. Don't forget that, of course, Steve is back with the kickoff tomorrow morning, and he's going to be continuing his A to Z of Merseyside football. And two really important names in Merseyside football that John Keith is bringing to Steve tomorrow, Ray Houghton and Billy Higgins. So I'm sure we all know loads about Ray anyway and the goals that he scored for Liverpool and the goals that he scored for Ireland as well. But find out a little bit more about his career and that of Billy Higgins tomorrow. John Keith will join Steve just after 9:30.
Radio City Talks, Sporting Heroes.
Okay, it is Sporting Hero time on Radio City Talk. And this afternoon, I've got a guest in the studio who's been the front man of a couple of brilliant bands. He's released some great solo stuff as well. It's a warm welcome to Ian Prowse.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Brilliant to have you back in. It's been a while.
It has been, yes, it has.
But things have gone pretty well for you in the last two or three years since then.
I've had a renaissance, you know, and it's all... We've done the old Pelé stuff again. It's been 25 years since those first two albums of mine came out, so we've done those for the past 2 years. But now we've got a brand new album out in about 3 weeks called Here I Lie. So and a couple of shows at the Philharmonic in the summer. So, yeah, they're exciting.
How does it feel playing stuff that's 25 years old again?
You know what? I don't mind because a lot of people really liked my Pelé songs, you know, Raid the Palace and Fair Blows the Wind for France and Fireworks. So I'll always play them. I'm not one of these artists who only plays the new stuff, you know, and kind of and tries to be cool about that. I'll play anything. If I've written it, why shouldn't I play it, you know?
You've been in the music industry for a fair time then, if you had 25 years since the Pelé stuff.
Yeah.
Always something you were keen to get into as a kid?
Ever since I heard The Clash and The Jam when I was 15, it was exactly what I wanted to do. And it was a real struggle because I didn't have, there was no musicians in our house or on our estate. My mum and dad didn't play and there was no guitars or pianos lying round. You know, I was remotely schooled by Joe Strummer and Hugh Cornwell and Paul Weller and Ian Dury and all those great acts that came out at the same time. So once I'd seen those, there was no turning back for me. You know, I was determined from that moment on.
How'd you get your first guitar then?
My first guitar, I had to go and get the one and only job I've ever had, which was I went to work in the Isle of Man one summer season, looking after kids on a bouncy castle. And I got enough money and I came back and got a guitar and an amp. And that was at the age of 18. And I've never had a proper job since.
18, I guess, is quite old to be getting your first guitar and then to have such a long career in the industry. Then.
Yeah, I was quite, as I said, because there was no musicians around in the family or around where I was from. That I was a late starter. And also I struggled. I really couldn't get it together. I didn't know how to play. I didn't know how to tune the guitar or what I had to do to get from A to B. But I was so determined, you know. I'd seen The Clash doing London Calling and that's what I was doing.
Brilliant stuff. When you look back now, what's the stuff that you're the proudest of?
I don't know. My song Home that we did with Amsterdam, I'm really proud of. When we played at Glastonbury was amazing, you know, releasing records with Elvis Costello and playing with my heroes, you know, I've got up and sang with Mick at The Clash and all of that sort of stuff. So there's lots and lots of different things that I've done that I'm very proud of, you know.
What's Glastonbury like to play?
Oh, we had the best time. You know, we kind of, we rose to the occasion because we're a big band. There's a lot of musicians in the band. We could really, really stick it to them. You know, we had the flutes and the Hammond organ going and the fiddle and the electric guitar. So we really got them going, you know. We had an amazing time.
Can you remember what stage you were on?
We were in one of the huge big tents. I can't remember what the stage was called. But, yeah, and we stayed there the whole weekend. Mm. So we really got into the spirit of the things. I've only just recovered.
When you get the offer to play something like Glastonbury, I bet it's just the immediate, yes, we'll do that, thank you.
Oh, absolutely, because the pay's rubbish, to be perfectly honest with you. But we just went, yeah, we're going. And I managed to get about 10 people on the guest list pretending they were working for us, you know. So we had a lovely old time when we went down. It suited us down to the ground.
Brilliant stuff. So you've got some new stuff out shortly.
We're
going to get onto your Sporting Hero in a moment or two, by the way.
But
Campaneros is the last album that I have of yours, which I absolutely loved.
Oh, lovely, yeah. That's 25 years into, or 22 years into my career when we put that out. And it had the best reviews of any record I've ever had. And it sold out, you know, of all of the copies. So it's just nice to not just be a flash in the pan 25 years ago, to have carried on, you know. And I wrote, Does This Train Stop on Merseyside? And then I wrote Home, and then we've done Compañeros. And this new album that we've got out now, I'm just getting a few reviews in. And it's lovely, you know, I'm getting some really positive feedback.
Brilliant
stuff.
Which
is heartwarming, and it makes it all worthwhile.
Absolutely, and we'll have to get you back in a few weeks' time when that new album is out. Yeah. In terms of being a musician, whenever I've interviewed musicians before for our Sporting Heroes segment, we've had the guys from The Farm, Peter Hooton, Keith Mullen. It's always been the same that football particularly as a sport and music go hand in hand.
Yeah, absolutely. In my whole life, you know, I only picked up the guitar when it became clear that I wasn't going to be good enough to become a professional footballer because I played, I'd played since I was little and I'd watched it constantly. And my dad had took me to the match and it was like, I remember him saying at a family party that I wasn't good enough and I overheard him. But he was right as well. I played for Ellesmere Port Town team and I'd captained the school team. And then I thought, you know what, he's right. I'm going to, this new love that I have, which is music, I'm going to dedicate myself to that completely. So the two things have always gone hand in hand in my whole life. And I was actually named after Ian St. John as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a story in itself.
Yeah. I met him up here once about 10 years ago. He was doing a radio show and I said, but he looked at me like, yeah, mate, everybody's told me that. You know, because there's so many Ians, isn't there, in Liverpool of a certain age. So I'm dipped in football, you know.
Could have been named like Fernando or something. There'd be kids growing up now, Fernando, Luis Suarez.
And they've all got cool names now, you know. Fantastic.
It's Radio City Talk. You're listening to Full Time and I'm doing a Sporting Hero with Ian Prowse, local musician. As you've heard, big football fan. And of a Tranmere persuasion.
I am a white, yeah. And wherever I go in the country, or if I go and play in Europe, played a lot in Europe last year, people always say, are you a red or a blue? And I always go, I'm a white. And sometimes they get confused because they've never even heard of Tranmere.
I get the same thing and faces get very confused.
Yeah. But obviously in the UK... And people who love football, it means, oh, you support Tranmere. And then they always mention the same sort of things. They mention John Aldrich and, you know, stuff like that. So, but I love it. You know, I absolutely love being the underdog. It's great.
So you were growing up, I guess, of an era of the 70s, the 80s. Not the easiest time to be watching Tranmere.
No, when I first started going, it was, you know, literally 1,100 people would be there. And we'd go in, I'd go in the cow sheds with my dad. And then at half time, I'd walk around the ground, you know, and go stand on the Bevington Kop, which didn't have a roof on, so that, you know, in case we scored. And that was what it was like. And it only really turned round in 1987 when we almost went out of existence when we played a famous game against Exeter. And we had to win to stay in the Football League. And we did win. And it was a memorable, memorable game. Gary Williams scored the goal that kept us in the Football League.
It's not a bad header if you ever see that as well.
No,
you can find the clip on YouTube. And I just love watching the crowd for matches and moments like that. And they just go delirious.
Oh, there was a guy, there was an older guy next to us during that game. And I'll never forget, he just kept screaming all the way through. But he wasn't looking at the pitch because he couldn't cope with what might happen. So he just kept screaming at himself because it was like his whole life was going to just fritter away in this 90 minutes. But thankfully we stayed, you know, and because those were the days when if you went out of the Football League, you went out of existence, you know, so the club was in immense peril. And then after that, we just built and built and we went through our absolute glory years.
Trip to the moon, as Johnny King christened it.
Deadly submarine.
Those two promotions, five Wembley visits.
I was
at
every
single
one, yeah.
In terms of your Sporting Hero, then let's get on to who that is. And I'm guessing it is someone who comes from that era of Tranmere.
Yeah, it's Ian Muir. Ian Muir was like, he was our Dalglish and he was a similar sort of player. You know, he had like a low centre of gravity and he always knew where everybody else was on the pitch. And of course, he was absolutely deadly in front of goal. He was the amount of goals he scored for us. I think he's still our, you know...
He is the record goal scorer for Tranmere, yeah.
And of course, he was. What kind of made him was his upfront partnership with Jim Steele. And they were really where our, like, Keegan and Toshack. And of course, out on the wing, we had Johnny Morrissey. So they were like, you know, you could see on the pitch, they were having loads of fun as well as scoring all the goals. And, you know, he was unplayable a lot of the time at that level. And he scored some goals where we would just shake our heads and go, how has he done that? You know, so he's my all-time sporting hero.
It's funny, when you look at players from this era, you would never get someone who has that much success at one club, who scores that many goals, staying with them for that long. A bigger club would come calling, a transfer would eventually happen, you'd think. But Ian Muir, He was with Tranmere in three different divisions, scoring goals in all of them. He was a true great at the club.
He was, and there was always rumours that he was going to go, you know, because we were going up the leagues, we were getting better and better, and we just thought, well, we're going to lose him, you know, at some point. That's going to happen. But he always stayed, you know, and he, the higher up he got, it seemed the better a player he got, because he just had that vision. You know, he knew what was going on the pitch all of the time. And as I said, some of the goals he scored...
It's the one that stands out.
Yeah, there was. He came in, it was at the Cowshed's end, and the ball came, he was standing on the corner of like the 6-yard box, and he was running in, and the ball came in really fast towards him, but he managed to flick it up, and in midair, he did like a 180-degree turn. He had his back to the goal, he did a 180-degree turn and volleyed it into the far corner. And I think I went down on my knees. My dad said, "What are you doing?" I said, "We're amongst gods," you know. So I can't remember who it was against, but I remember the goal vividly. And obviously, it was a Friday night as well.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? There is a lot of debate amongst Tranmere fans as to who was better between Muir and Alder. Now, Muir, of course, is the leading scorer. Alder played a lot of his matches in the all of his Tranmere matches in the Championship, as it is now.
Yeah.
Why do you have Muir ahead of Alder?
Because I think it was Ian Muir that took us up through the divisions. You know, he was part of that team that Johnny King put together on a shoestring budget when nobody, you know, cared about us. I know Frank Worthington had signed Ian Muir, but it was Johnny King that brought out the best of him. And with Jimmy Harvey right in the middle of the pitch, it was a centre midfielder of great vision as well. If Jimmy Harvey was playing well, we'd win every time. And it was with Muir and then Eric Nixon in goal, and of course Mark Hughes and Stevie Vickers in the middle, right up the middle of the pitch. That was what took us up the leagues, you know. And so I feel as though if it wasn't for Ian Muir, we'd have never gotten to a position whereby somebody like John Aldrich or Pat Nevin would even have looked at us. You know, it was them that took us up to that high level. So that's why he's the man for me.
Have you ever had the chance to meet him and just tell him how much you feel about him?
I did. I pronounced undying love to him once. I was doing singing a do and all the Scouts are arty there. You know, it was a charity thing. And the organiser knew I was a Tranmere fan, so she put me on the table next to him. And when I got some singing, he said, "Oh, that was a great idea. I played Does This Train Stop on Merseyside." And he went, "It's a great song, that, mate." And I went, "I am so glad you're sitting next to me." And he was absolutely lovely. And we had a few drinks together. And we went through every single game. I made him go through every game, all the Wembley games, all of the, you know, because I went away and everything. And every free kick he took, and he was very gracious, and he I think he enjoyed it as much as I did.
And I think the wonderful thing about that era, and this doesn't just go for Tranmere, it would go for any club up and down the country, is there was a connection, a really close connection between the players and the fans, in that you felt as a fan you could approach the players, which maybe you don't have in this era. There's a bit of an aura around them, but back then they were just one of you.
Yeah, well, I've become really good mates with Eddie Bishop, for example, who was one of our key players around that time, and just bled like Tranmere. You know, I once saw him tackle a Bristol City player with his head on the floor, and he was part of the spirit. I remember I spoke to Eddie when Johnny King had passed away, and he was just bereft. You know, he said all of the boys are just completely gutted because he had such an effect upon our lives. And you did get that feeling that there's a few thousand of us Tranmere fans and the team and Johnny King, and we were just a tribe on the march. And it was the best of times supporting them then. You know, and any team that came to Tranmere, all of a big team, we'd give them a good game and we'd beat them, you know. It was amazing times.
It really was.
The glory years.
And hopefully they're about to return.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Ian, great to have you in the
Thanks
studio.
For having me
we'll have to get you back in shortly as well with the new album, but your sporting hero, the wonderful Ian Muir.
Absolutely.